podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 152 of the Unholy Trinity podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Joining myself and Pete today from the Big Fight Weekly is Chris Hume. Chris, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good. It's like another time I've come on here. I've had a lump sum of fights going on the day before.
And yeah, it was a busy night, wasn't it, last night as well? There was a bit of boxing. I saw, if you can call it boxing with Jake Paul against Anderson Silva. Obviously, Jason was on, wasn't he, as well? Can't remember. What's his name?
Was it we fought Lomachenko yesterday?
Lomachenko, there we go. Just slipped your mind totally there. I was going to call him Mikhailenko for a second. But that was he played a bit earlier on. So yeah. Lomachenko was back in the ring after his stint with the Ukrainian army. So yeah. A lot of fights going on last night, that's for sure. But glad to have you on. Lee's just said the night off air, then Lee's gone to gymnastics. So we're not sure if he's taking part or not. So keep your eye out on the Northwest tonight, tomorrow, for how he gets on, is all I'll say. But he's apparently not bad on the horse. So we'll keep a little eye out for that tomorrow. But great to have you on the show. And you know, it's... A lot of people, it's been a little bit funny, haven't they, in regards to yesterday's performance against Fulham. Mixed reaction, it's fair to say. Obviously, 0-0 draw. Certainly, points away from home cannot be sniffed at. And we mentioned ourselves over the last couple of weeks or so. If we can, from last week, from Palace onwards, if we can pick up points in all those games, whatever manner that may come in, then, Chris, it's got to be seen as overall, for me, it's got to be seen as quite a positive outcome, hasn't it?
I think so, because, I mean, if you look back at our stats when it comes to playing any clubs away in London, they're not fortuitous, are they? We usually cock up against London clubs away. So to go away, as well as Fulham, you know, they're flying high. They won 3-0, didn't they, midweek? So, you know, they were on one as well. So to come away, you know, with a point, I take that. I think it's more for confidence, you know, and we kept a clean sheet. You know, it looked like someone swapped Mitrovic's boots up for bananas for most of the game. So that was, you know, we were lucky there. But I take it as a positive. You know, I mean, last season we couldn't buy a point, you know, let alone a win away in any game. So, you know, you look at Leeds, Brentford and Fulham, all tough teams in their own, you know, in their own way at home as well, especially. And, you know, we've taken 3 points away, you know, 3 points from them together. Like, so I think it's a positive. And I think, you know, just builds more morale for us, doesn't it, really, going forward?
Of course it does. And, you know, last season, you look at that kind of game, whether it's a newly promoted side or not, just an away game in general, and Everton massively struggled to pick points out of games. You know, we think back to, you know, Leicester, where we got 3 points, and the Watford 0-0, which was a poor game last season. But even under Frank Lampard, we really, really struggled to pick up points away from home. And so far this season, obviously, we've got a win at Southampton. We've got now to three draws, Brentford, Leeds, and also against Fulham. So not a bad return in general. And against the Fulham side, by the way, we were the first side to stop them scoring at home, which is a positive in itself. But Pete, we've got to pull on those positive aspects. I mean, we're going to obviously unravel some of the lack of attacking intent at times, I'd say, yesterday. But we've got to look at those positives, hold on to them and look to build and go forward into next weekend, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I completely agree with Lampard's post-match comments that last season we would have lost that game by a couple of goals. I mean, it was a bit of a tale of two halves for us, wasn't it? You came in at half-time and felt if we were a little bit more clinical, we could have got one or two ourselves. I know maybe we rode our luck at times, so we had to be defensively tight, because the game really opened up, didn't it? After about 25, 30 minutes, there was a bit of a mad sort of last 15 minutes of the first half. And then second half, we just never seemed to get going, did we? Really struggled to get out, ended up quite deep, never really got our foot on the ball. And even when we went 4-4-2 for the last period of the game, attacking wise, we just couldn't seem to find ourselves. We couldn't get any momentum. So I think in the grand scheme of things, it's a very good point. And another, you know, another really solid defensive performance. You know, and Jordan Pickford again, you know, again, excellent. You know, he gets so much press when he, you know, he might make a mistake that gets highlighted, but no way does he not get enough press when he puts in a performance like that. You know, he made 5 or 6 really solid saves. I thought he commanded his area. I thought his distribution was generally very good. A couple that went out of play, but it was another really, really solid 90 minutes from him.
I think that's what we're coming to expect from Jordan Pickford, and I've done for quite a long time now. I mean, that save from Willian was unbelievable, by the way. And for me, you're going to have to go a long way to find a better save this month. You know, I know he won save of the month, didn't he, for his save in the Merseyside derby when he tipped a Nunez shot onto the bar. But I think looking at that, Willian's 6 yards out there, he's turned quickly. Got lucky with the little ricochet off Tarkowski, wasn't it? But he's got lucky, he's turned sharply. That's a great save, by the way, with his top hand. And I don't even think he got enough praise for it last night, because I thought it was absolutely exceptional. And then was it the header as well? Mitrovic's header tipped it over the bar. Great save again. It was probably dipping in. That's just Jordan Pickford and how he's been. And, you know, fair play to him. He's in great form. And I think us coming away with a clean sheet, I think a lot of that coincides with, yeah, okay, we said it time and again how much we've improved defensively. But that also counts for Jordan Pickford's form as well. You know, he is a lot more stable as a goalkeeper. I'd say he's a lot more commanding. I think the back four trust him, which is really important. And I think it all coincides. So even when teams are getting over 20 shots a game off against us, when you've got a goalkeeper who's in form, who's maybe saving things that you could maybe argue he's got no right to save, then it puts you in a good position to go on and pick up points in the game. But that first half, Chris, you know, Pete said it there, you know, we had a bit of an attacking intent. It was end-to-end at times. I thought Everton started, you know, particularly well. We had that Demarai Gray shot that the goalkeeper tipped over. Dominic Calvert-Lewin is going to be disappointed not to have put that Demarai Gray cross in. You know, it was a great, great ball. And maybe if he's, you know, a little bit match sharper, he puts it away. But the first half, Fulham had chances, which obviously we've alluded to already, but Everton really should have put one of those chances away, shouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I think we always start off really well, a lot faster, don't we? More so this season with Lampard. And you know, I mean, when we're playing away, and, you know, I mean, and as we discussed, you know, our waveform has always been a bit sketchy, hasn't it? Especially in London. We're given those opportunities, we have to sort of take them away. Because, you know, I mean, you look at the second half and we did ride a luck a lot, but, you know, we defended really well. But, you know, in these situations, if we could have sneaked one in, I say if Gray or Calvert-Lewin got one of them in, I mean, then we had something to hold on to, that wouldn't we, really? And it'd have been a bit more joyous then that, you know, okay, we would have been a bit of a smash and grab. But, yeah, we just got to take those opportunities when they come about. But I think in time, you know, I mean, things will click. I think, you know, everyone's still sort of learning to play with each other, especially the newer players. And I think, obviously, Calvert-Lewin has got to sort of, as you said then, is get to his match sharpness, sorry. And, you know, and then he'd be putting him away. I've got all confidence in, you know, in Calvert-Lewin refining himself from when Ancelotti was in charge.
I think, well, we know that there's a player there, and it was great to see him get his goal last week against Crystal Palace. And, you know, another 90 minutes under his belt again against Fulham will do him the absolute world of good. That's his first 90 minutes he's completed, I think, off the top of my head. I thought he was taken off against Palace, wasn't he? So he got 90 minutes under his belt for the first time in a long, long time. So it's great for him to actually complete a full game. But what I will say, Pete, one thing that people, I don't think, really notice with Dominic Calvert-Lewin is how good his runs are. And if you look at him, I know he's offside quite often at times, but I think, I mean, the Iwobi ball second half where Dom gets the shot off, Leno saves it, and he sticks the rebound in. I think his runs are very, very clever. And I think sometimes our midfielders and those who are feeding the ball to him have got to get on the same wavelength as him, because he makes, for me, particularly good, sharp and clever runs, doesn't he?
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. I know exactly what you're talking about, because going back to the Palace game, there were several times in that match where players hesitated giving him the ball quickly, you know, for whatever reason. I think there's quite a clear example second half in the Palace game where, you know, Dom ended up having words with Mikhailenko because he just wanted to feed him through quicker.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely spot on. His runs are sharp and his runs are clever, but he needs that ball being fed through quickly, and that plays to his strengths because he's so strong and he's so quick. And you want your striker to play on instinct. And you know, one or two touches, or you know, taking 4 or 5 seconds to think about it before you release the ball is the difference between getting closed down by the centre half or being offside. And I think we saw maybe two or three of those yesterday. But as well, maybe also there's a little bit of a sharpness factor as well. He's still, you know, getting back to full fitness, full sharpness. You know, I'm sure over time his runs will get better as well. And more goals will come. Like you said, Mike, the number one priority with him is just keep him fit. Keep him fit, get him strong, get him confident, and he'll start scoring again.
But I think as well on that front, obviously, if we keep him fit, he can then start to build those relationships with the midfield players, because we've obviously got some players who are new to the club who maybe don't know Dominic Calvert-Lewin as a player as such, know what is, you know, totally what his best attributes are and you know when to play that ball. And I think that will come also in time as well, building a relationship, playing more and more football with those players around him. Because we know how good he can be as he proved under Carlo Ancelotti, and very much, you know, as a sort of 6-8 yard out striker, that's when he's at his best. And like you say, playing on instinct, but making those runs and making sure that the players, because we've got players with quality. I mean, Alex Iwobi has been our best player this season. He can pick a pass with the best of them. So it's just about, you know, getting rid of that rustiness. Players get onto the same wavelength, and I think then we'll start to see a bit more of a prolific Dominic Calvert-Lewin, that's for sure. But obviously, we mentioned that the game was a game of two halves, as people quite often say. And the second half, we certainly didn't hit the heights in any way, shape, or form of the first half in an attacking sense. I thought Mitrovic, on the whole, I think he played Connor Cody very, very well. He's a big lad, of course. But I think Connor Cody, because he was the one, if you watch, he was going with Mitrovic quite often. He was quite often sort of going man to man. But Mitrovic was also pulling on Connor Cody because he knows out of him and Tarkowski, the more physical of the two is James Tarkowski, and he's probably stronger. And Cody, that's the first time really Cody ever has lost a battle, I think, for us. Because when Tarkowski went towards Mitrovic, quite often he was winning the ball. He was a little bit more physical. But we've got to discuss it. Mitrovic should have been on the pitch. Let's get that right. First half, Chris, when he makes that tackle on the Gitagal again, and no one's sitting here saying there was any kind of malice, because there wasn't. You know, you can quite easily see he's gone for the ball. Garner's got a little bit lucky, really, and you know, he nearly lost it and just nipped in. But we've got to look at the consistency of refereeing once again in the Premier League. And that has, well, it's probably the most nailed on red card you're likely to see after the Virgil van Dijk potential red card on Amadou Onana, isn't it?
It's frustrating, because I was looking at a post today on Twitter, and I think it was from the Toffee Blues, and he had a slideshow, and it said spot the red card. And they had Mitrovic, van Dijk's, and then I think, you know, obviously Allen's against Newcastle last season. And you look at them, and you know, they're all quite zoomed in. And it's equally frustrating, because we saw, I think it was at Man City, Newcastle, when I think it was at Kieran Trippier did the same tackle pretty much and got a red card, then got it changed to a yellow. But as we're going back to this one, it's frustrating because there's no consistency. And these are tackles, yeah, okay, there was not much power in it, and it's not done deliberately. But they can, you know, I mean, that could have put Garner out for, say, you know, 3-4 months. Yeah. They are potentially really bad tackles, but the referee and the VAR as well quickly just dismiss it. It's frustrating, as you said, Van Dijk did the same against Onana, and it's if you're Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, City, and that happens to one of their players, and it's one of our players doing so, you know full well that's coming back as a red card. You just have that, you know, that feeling immediately inside your head, and it's just frustrating that we seem to get all these dog decisions by referees when it comes to that. was it Gibbs who was the last person to be sent off against us? West Brom was it when we beat them 6-2, didn't we?
And I think as well. I think if you want to put that into games, is it 102 games that I read this morning? Since 101 games, so it hasn't been an opposition player sent off against Everton in the last 101 games, which is an incredible stat. When you look at, I think it was friend of the show, Jim Keoghan, put that slide, that picture up with those five different incidents, and he said spot the red card, or which one was the red card, or, you know, whatever it might be. And obviously the Alan one was in Newcastle was given obviously as a red card. And you look at the rest of them. I mean, we've spoke about it on the show numerous times. The tackle on Anthony Gordon from John Joe Shelvey, the tackle on Anthony Gordon from Andre Ayew, the tackle from Virgil van Dijk on Onana, and the one obviously yesterday on Adesanya Garnaghy. And those four were all 100% red cards any day of the week. And yet again, we don't get it. And what drives me nuts, Pete, is this line that they peddle out, because this was the official line, the same line that was used when Virgil van Dijk got away with the one against Onana. And it was there wasn't enough intensity in the tackle. So just because his leg wasn't broken effectively, there wasn't enough intensity in the tackle to warrant a red card. Now, that for me, how on earth you can say that and make that assumption when you see the tackle, that is incredible, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was enough intensity to put him down. How much more do you want?
I said
right at the time, he's over the top of the ball. So if you're over the top of the ball, you're out of control. So discussion over. It's as simple as that. If you're over the top of the ball, he's gone over his ankle. He's not got the top of his foot. He's gone over his ankle. Now on the leg, that's off the foot. It's out of control. It's dangerous. Like you said, intent and intensity shouldn't come into the picture. It's out of control. It's a dangerous challenge. It would be an unfortunate red card. You might even feel a little bit for him, but it was a decision that went against us. And just on the note you were saying about the battle set between Mitrovic and Cody, I thought it was really interesting, actually, because watching the game, he had that many chances. I thought, this is going to come back to haunt us. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a typical Everton. He shouldn't be on the pitch, and he's going to score the winner. But I actually disagree with you slightly. I thought he was really, really clever. He's just such a handful to play against, because if you're watching what he did, he went tight to Cody and then he pulled off. His movement was phenomenal. The amount of chances he made for himself just by peeling off the defender and playing between Cody and Tarkowski, they didn't know who to pick up.
I think the thing with Mitrovic is, I think he's got a bit of a, not a bad reputation, but they always say he, as a Premier League striker, he struggles, but he's great in the Championship. So we found it hard, I think, last time to replicate that kind of form. You look at him so far this season, he scored countless goals. That's the first time I've really watched him, obviously, yesterday against us. And he was a massive handful. He looks like an absolute unit, by the way. He looks so difficult to defend against. I thought we haven't got with Conor Cody, because Conor Cody's not as big as him and he's not as strong as him. And sometimes you come up against attackers who do get the better of you. That's just football, you know. But I think that, you know, people look at the past with Mitrovic and give him a bit of a bad reputation and don't show him any kind of respect. And really, you know, he's going to be disappointed he hasn't scored. I think he had 10 shots yesterday and didn't score a goal, which is an unbelievable record. But I think that, you know, on another day, maybe one or two of those would have gone in if it wasn't for the likes of Jordan Pickford. As I say, I think that there were some really good blocks in there. Mikhailenko, I thought, was exceptional yesterday. Defensively, we all know he's strong defensively, but I think when we have a game where we do spend quite a bit of time defending, you see the best of him. But then you also saw him, that little move down the left-hand side when he got his shorts pulled back, when he beat the, was it Cordoba Reed, he went past him. You know, that's in his locker, but he plays a little bit of confidence. We do see him get forward a little bit more. Because against Palace, I thought attacking, he was showing a bit more of an attacking intent then. But I thought he was exceptional. You know, his block and his tackling was very, very good. But I think the important thing for me to take from the game is that we can't expect to rock up to to these grounds, whether it's Fulham, you know, Southampton, Brentford, Leeds, whatever it might be, and expect to win the game and as a steamroller side. And that is just where we are, in my opinion. Everton are an average football side. You know, we're hopefully going to be in and around mid-table, which we've said before would be, I think, a real positive improvement and reflection of where this side and who this side actually are. So Everton can't go to these kind of grounds and expect to batter sides. We're not that kind of team at this moment in time. What we need to build to, which the manager got absolutely spot on. He says last week, he said we got all the plaudits against Palace, rightly so. You know, it was we played really well. He said, but I don't get carried away. We won a game of football. There's a lot of work to do. You go on to the next game. And the manager says, I don't get carried away with one win. You know, we had got the plaudits last week. We were nowhere near that level against Fulham. We come away with a point. Overall, you know, you're happy with the point. And that's that. And we've got we've said it a few times about sort of tempering our expectations as fans. You've got to remember where we were last season. We were on the brink of relegation and survived with one game to go, effectively. You know, we've shipped a lot of players out. We've brought quite a few players in. It's a massive transition, you know, compared to the back end of last season compared to now. So we've got to remember, Chris, haven't we, that, you know, we are at a particular level. It is going to take time to build. And more importantly, it's going to take time for Everton to become a consistent Premier League side where we can string together two or three really good performances.
Yeah, I think everyone wants to go back to, you know, the positive Moyes days where we were finishing fifth and sixth every other season. You know, we weren't out the top half, were we, for a long time under David Moyes, but he built and was given time to build a squad. And I think, you know, if Lampard is the same mould, and I like what Lampard says, and, you know, he understands what we think and we feel, then I think, you know, we will get there eventually. And I think, you know, he's doing it slowly but surely. You know, we all saw ourselves, and we have done for the last couple of years, you know, what we needed and what needed to change. And he's done that by bringing in Tarkowski, Connor Cody, bringing back Idrissa Gueye, bringing in fresh face like Onana, who's going to learn from Idrissa Gueye, you know, and then James Garner as well, who's, you know, behind them. And then you've got, you know, Nathan Patterson. So, you know, I mean, you can see the similarities between what Moyes did back then to what Frank Lampard's doing now. And I think you're right, where I think we should sort of not go hammer and tom when we go away thinking, oh, we're going to smash these, smash them. We haven't been like that for a very long time. I think Burnley was the last team we've been away and we've actually literally smashed, you know. And you're right, we've got to temper our expectations a bit. And I think, you know, if people aren't happy with not going to Fulham and beating Fulham, then, you know, I mean, they need to give themselves a bit of a reality check, because I myself, my own opinion now is I see that as a fantastic point. We're not going to go away, as you said, and play teams away and come away fantastic result. And it's not going to happen all the time. We might get the odd one here and there currently. But, you know, going forward, if Lampard's allowed to have the time, as you say, ship the players he doesn't want out, and we know a lot of players that he's got rid of, we're quite happy with to see the back end of, I think we'll be fine. And I think in a couple of years, in a couple more windows, you know, we'll be in the right place. He's the back in the midfield at the moment, where the ones that need, you know, the positions that we need to sort, he's gone out and sourced that. And we look really good between defence and midfield. You know, it's just further up the pitch now. We just need to evolve.
Well, and that's important that we discuss, obviously, that final fair, because yesterday, like we said, second half was a bit of a, it was black and white, wasn't it? It's sort of night and day between first and second half in an attacking sense. And for me, almost, I think we get into a headspace, Everton, where we get halfway through the second half and if we're sitting on a draw, for example, we then go into ourselves and think, we'll have this, we'll take a point. I think that's a mentality thing, that not so much from the manager, because he did allude to it last season as well, where he tries to say to the players, you know, you can't just sort of sit on something, so to speak. But I think the players have still, the core players who were there last season have still got that what we have, we hold mentality, I think. So we get so far into the second half, it's like, right, we'll sit there. And we said to repeat, where we got that throw in, was it stoppage time in the corner, right. By the Fulham box. And we think, that's okay. Look, either someone take a long throw in and put them under a bit of pressure, or try and get across into the box. And we went back to Jordan Pickford from a throw in the corner. And it was just strange, wasn't it? Really strange, but it shows the mentality for me.
I couldn't get my head around that. What was that, 85 minutes?
I think it was late. I think it was stoppage time. I think it was stoppage time, yeah.
I can remember it was McNeil in the corner. So you think you've got almost like dead ball specialist, haven't you? Take the short throw and get it in. And at that point, we're 4-4-2.
Yeah.
We've got two strikers. And it went all the way back to Jordan Pickford. And it's hard to get your head around that decision. But like you say, is it, you know, does it come from a place of just wanting to protect an away point when we've had a second half where really we've not had much momentum? And look, at the risk of stating the obvious, but I do think it's such a crucial point. It's a front line that's lost for Charleston.
Yeah.
It's an unchanged front line. Yeah, arguably one of our hardest workers, you know, across that sort of front three or four. You know, he turned up with the vast majority of our goals last season, and on his day, he's a player who's absolutely unplayable. And you know, that's been deducted from our squad, and we've, you know, for a number of reasons, haven't been able to effectively address that. So I think again, fans just need to maybe temper their expectations a little bit, and it's clearly playing a role.
Let's give him time, though, isn't it? I mean, we gave him all his time, and look what he built. And you know, and he had less money to spend. You see the shine from Lampard, but you get the same feeling what Moyes had. I know Roberto Martinez, and he sold us fantastically. You know what I mean? And he got behind Martinez just because of the way he, you know, sold Everton to us, you know, resold Everton to us again. But what you see with Lampard is you can see what he's trying to do, and he is trying to involve Everton, but it's not something that happens overnight. It's not happening, you know, two windows, three windows, four windows. Gradually we get, you know, to the point where we can get back to the Everton that we're finishing, you know, fifth and sixth. Obviously, that's going to be a lot harder than it was back then. But I think, you know, people need to sort of just slow it down and just, you know, take Lampard as he is and not be so aggravated when, you know, we are drawing or we do lose.
So just on that point, Chris, because I know we're talking about the upper third of the pitch, but after 13 games under Rafa, we conceded three or more goals three times. We conceded 20 goals and we'd only kept three clean sheets. Whereas this season, we've never conceded more than two goals. Total goals conceded 12 and we've kept four clean sheets. You know, and that's including games against, you know, obviously, you know, Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs,
United.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I was trying to say last night on social media. You know, and it's we can always, and that's all. Obviously, we all sit here and we unpick performances, and we're going to discuss the attackers after the break in a minute. But if you look at that defensive stats, 13 games played, 12 goals conceded. That's a far cry from last season when it was 38 games played and 68 goals conceded. So that is a massive. I know we're only partway through the season, but that's some change that for me. You know, when we shipped so many goals, it was quite embarrassing at times last season, the number of goals that we conceded, even under Frank Lampard. You know, the pressure the side was under, unable to handle the pressure at times. We shipped five against Spurs, didn't we? We were massively open, and you know we shipped three at home to Brentford. If we remember that game correctly, even the game we actually beat Palace in, we still could see the two goals in that game, and you know we were wide open time and again. But I think we've got to understand that, you know, we said it over the last few weeks. He's looked at the defence. He's seen that as the priority. He certainly brought in the right characters, which is really important, and the right level of player. Who were, you know, the two lads at the back in the middle are both leaders, fantastic examples of professional footballers and professional centre-halves, and both in with a great shout of going to the World Cup, by the way, and both would deserve it on their recent performances. So he's addressed that situation. He's given them a little bit of a support in front with the Juice of Ghana game. Obviously, Onana is sitting there now as well. So you've got those kind of players. We know that the final third is our biggest issue. We know that. You know, we've scored 12 goals, haven't we, in 13 games. It's not a great return, really. But we've picked up points. We picked up 14 points. So we've got to look at that as well. But the attacking side of things, they did look to resist that further in the transfer window. It didn't quite work out. Obviously, we've got the Demarai Gray and Anthony Gordon as our wide players. Dwight McNeil, obviously, as well, at this moment in time. But I think it's important we discuss what we sort of see or where we see the improvements that can be made with the wider players in the shorter term after our first break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And in terms of attacking, like I said, Everton have struggled at times. Obviously, we had a great performance against Crystal Palace, scored 3 goals, looked fantastic, created chances, scored 3 really, really good goals. We see against Fulham, some more consistency again, where we didn't look particularly, or we didn't have an attacking threat second half. And, you know, a lot of that for me stems from, I think players just not being brave enough at times and not showing that consistency. In the transfer window, the fact that we were linked with players like Kudus, as an example, and Mudryk from Shakhtar Donetsk, two real quality young players, both done well in the Champions League this season. Both have been, obviously, highly televised. And, you know, you saw the goal that Mudryk scored against Celtic in midweek. What a fantastic goal that was, you know. So, real quality players that we were linked to. And we were on the verge of getting Kudus across the line. So, the manager knows that the final third is a real struggle. And if you put one of those players in there, Everton become a different side. And like you said before, Pete, no Richarlison there is a big loss. And there's never been any, Richarlison's not been replaced. You know, we brought in Neil Mopay, Dwight McNeil, and there's been no like-for-like replacements for Richarlison. Difficult player to replicate, granted, but Akudis, Mudryk, those kind of players, I think could make a real difference. And that's why we were linked to them in the summer, because the manager knows we've got to improve our creative aspect, our creative side. And at the moment, Pete, and Anthony Gordon, Demarai Gray, started the season pretty well. We saw against Palace, Anthony Gordon, I thought, was returning to a little bit of form, because he's really struggled for me in the last few weeks. Which, listen, I get it, he's a young player. He's learned his trade. I said it last week. The kid carried us at times last season and got us over the line, in my opinion. It's just through sheer effort and work rate. And we put a lot of pressure on his shoulders last season. So now it's time for him to develop, and he needs our support. But both him and Demarai Gray, they struggle, don't they? They have a lack of consistency at times to actually carry a little bit of form from one game to the next.
Yeah, I partially agree with that. I'd say I agree with that 50%, because I think squad depth has a big role to play as well, because, you know, not that I'm saying there's any easy position on the pitch to play, but I think for those forward wide players, whether it's in a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, I think what you're asking of those players over 90 minutes is just constant bursts of energy and acceleration, and using the ball well and getting us on the front foot. And sometimes, particularly when you look at the second half against Fulham, how deep we were. Anthony Gordon or Demarai Gray, they're picking up the ball at the corner of the 18-yard box and having to run us up the pitch. So I think a valid question is, a valid point is, ideally we would have more scope to rotate. And I don't think either of them would be playing anywhere near as much football as they have been for us. And I think, like you allude to, Mike, I think then that starts to have an impact on performances. And, maybe there's an argument that it's a bit of a vicious circle. If you're not on your game, you're playing in that kind of position, it starts to affect your game. And I think ideally you want a big squad where you can maybe take one or two of those players out for a little bit, or control the amount of football they're playing for you. And, for one reason or another, we're not in that position at the moment. But if you look at what we've done with our midfield three, we've done exactly that. And we've got the ability to bring someone like James Garner on, who can perform at a level, arguably as good as, Idrissa Garner. When Garner goes off, you don't find yourself thinking, oh no. You think, great, James Garner's coming on. And from what we've seen from him so far, he's solid. He plays the right passes. You've got confidence in him. And I think sometimes when Anthony Gordon or Demarai Gray go off, we were discussing last week, Dwight McNeil, he's been a great player for us so far, but he's a different kind of player. And I think we're not able to make those sort of like-for-like swaps at the moment. And again, over time, when we're able to add to our squad, hopefully it will benefit those players as well. But I think just the expectation on two young lads and, you know, the amount of fatigue, the amount of football they're having to play, it's going to start taking a bit of a toll.
I think you're right. And I think it's been really easy to predict Everton start 11 over the last few weeks. I mean, it's been that easy on the Fan Hub app where you can win a £3 every time you get it right. I've got about a night's worth of ale there and I don't even drink on the app. That's how easy it's been because the rotation that you always want to play your stronger side, of course you do. But when players aren't maybe in form, so as an example, you know, without singling these lads out, the Maire does dip at times, Anthony Gordon does dip at times, and I'm understanding of the reasons behind that. Like you mentioned, Pete, I think it's a great point. The fact that week in, week out, those two are the ones who will start every single week. You know, Dwight McNeil has started a few games when he's had to. Obviously, Anthony Gordon has served a suspension already as well. But those two lads are in our starting 11 week in, week out, without the prospect, really, let's be honest, of Dwight McNeil coming in. If they're all fit, those two lads start. Now, that is where, obviously, we mentioned about making improvements in the transfer window, where we didn't quite get it across the line. Because if you're sitting here now with those two lads, with Dwight McNeil, with Kudus, okay, Kudus plays a little bit more central, but he could play wide in that front three if he wants, you know, a Mudrick, those kind of players. If you had that kind of quality as well, and you've got four wide players or five wide players, you think, bloody hell, we've got an abundance of riches here. That also means that players can step up the game. So I think as well, Pete, when we say about them starting week in, week out, and because they've got to, I think complacency can also set in as well, because they know they will start. And I think it's really important that we look to address that. But Chris, what are your thoughts on it? And do you agree with what Pete's saying there? Because, you know, they're going to be starting every single week because there's really no other option. That's why we're seeing little dips in performances, fatigue, things like that do come into play.
Yeah, definitely. And Pete's right. But who really have we got to replace them? Yeah, we do have Dwight McNeil. And I'd actually like to see McNeil play a bit more now. Calvert-Lewin being back. We all know that McNeil's got a good left foot. I'd like to see maybe we drop either Gray or Gordon for the game. And I'd like to see McNeil play a bit more on the left because we know he's left-footed and he's very left-footed. And, you know, I'd like to see a bit more of that. And I think that could probably help Calvert-Lewin if we could get McNeil up a bit forward instead of being pushed back so much. But I do agree because, really, if you look at the bench, we've got more midfielders. Like back, was it last season, we had more defenders on the bench than we had other position. So now we have more midfielders.
Goalkeepers, Chris. We have about five goalkeepers
last season. Yeah. Half a dozen goalkeepers, yeah. Throw them on as well, we might as well. But we haven't got anyone really, if you look. And you know, I mean, yeah, okay, people will go and scoff, say, oh, about the youth players, but I think we've done the right thing this season and given them chances to shine under other clubs at a level where they can build themselves. So maybe possibly in the next 12, 18 months, break into the first team or be on the fringes of it at least. Yeah, I just think, yeah, they probably are fatigued and there isn't any, oh, he's going to take my position now. Is there? There's nothing like that. I don't think Gordon and Gray feel threatened by Dwight McNeil personally. And I think that's what they need to feel. You know, you've got to fight for your position. You know, like you say, you look at the midfield, you look at defence. There's players multiply for the positions that we have now. So they are fighting for the positions. When you go further up the field, there's nothing really there to fight for. So you know exactly what happens. Like half-arse training, not saying they do, but you know, you have that mentality. You half-arse training and then go, oh, I know I'll be in the squad come Saturday, Sunday.
I think I'd like to see Dwight McNeil given a nod in probably a home game. You know, we've seen him coming obviously away from home, and I'd like to see him given a nod. Now he's, you know, after a great cameo against Crystal Palace, where I thought, you know, obviously scored a great goal, but he, you know, he's shown his defensive ability as a defensive winger. I'd like to see him now with Dom from the off, like you say, use that left foot, whip some great balls in. You know, play off the right as well. You know, put them. Keep on switching with whoever else is on the other side, and look to find Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He'll thrive off those kind of, you know, balls that he can deliver. We've seen him do it. I think he's probably our best corner taker, to be honest. We've seen how well he can strike a ball, especially in the friendly against Dynamo Kiev. Scored a great goal against Southampton, which he caught the ball really well. He's a pure striker of a football and can pick out a man. So I think his time will come, and maybe it'll come against Leicester next weekend, which would be interesting to see how that plays out. But it gives you a little bit of a different dimension than what a Gordon and Gray, you know, wing attack actually gives you. And obviously with the return now of Nathan Patterson, you will fully expect to probably get the nod against Leicester. I think, you know, a decent sort of 25 minutes yesterday on his return. I think it gives your side a different dimension yet again, because you've got then an attacking fullback behind either, you know, a McNeil, Gordon or Gray. So that changes things up. But I think, you know, in January, I think we will see, assuming the club have got a little bit of room there in terms of finances, I think we will see movements in the market for a wide player, because I think it changes the side. I think if you've, like we've said, you've got that competition, if you've got players then having to sort of, you know, be on the toes and be at it all the time. And, you know, we're not here to question players' attitudes, but I think when they've got a player behind them or no, they're not assured to be starting a game. We've said it with other players as well. There's competition in the squad now in certain areas. Midfield is probably, like you said, is the key. When you've got, you know, you've got your starting midfield three, but you've got James Garner, who made a vital interception yesterday as well, came on, looked neat and tidy, as he always does. Tom Davis, who, when he's played this season, I think has performed particularly well. Abdoulaye Doucouré, who was nailed on to start week in, week out, only probably 12 months ago. You've got three players there waiting to come in. So there's competition there. That competition has got to move forward now. You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin will always start at this moment in time. Dwight McNeil, unlucky, probably maybe not to, but Anthony Gordon and Damari Gray will always start pretty much week in, week out. So we've got to now look to address that situation. But like we say, patience is needed in our situation. A lot of work needs to be done in terms of recruitment and bringing the right players in and making us more of an attacking force. I think at home, with the crowd behind them, we play that slightly more open football, whereas we're less inclined to, when we go away, we're less inclined to go away from home and open up at times. When we did open up yesterday, and in that first half especially, we looked a little bit wide open at the back ourselves and looked a bit susceptible to conceding the goal. But it's certainly not that, you know, we don't want to sit here and knocking Damari Gray and Anthony Gordon, because it's not all on them that we haven't scored a great deal of goals. But we need to, I think, they need to be a little bit braver in the decisions. I mean, even think back, Peter, was it the first half where Dom makes a great run and Anthony Gordon gets the ball? Instead of playing it along the floor and playing him in down the channel, he absolutely smashes the ball out of play for a goal kick. It's little things like that, isn't it, Pete, where it's just decision-making. Make the right decision. And, you know, and another example again, second half, Dom makes a bit of a decoy run and he plays the ball to Dom on his wrong foot. Instead of using him as a decoy, coming back inside and getting the shot away, it's fine margins, it's decision-making, but that's what we need to get better at between him and Gray, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And look, I've got no doubt at all that you know, they're going to be looking at stuff like this in training. And, you know, the squad has been through a lot of changes. Calvert-Lewin's only just back in. It's going to take a little bit of time for things to click, isn't it? But just going back to what you were saying about, you know, January and the window, it's going to be really strange, isn't it? Because a couple of half-decent news outlets have reported, by all accounts, we are shortlisting attackers for January. Well, not only will it be a January window, it's going to be a post-World Cup window. So if ever you could hoodoo a window before it's opened, there's two fairly bad omens, isn't there? That it's like the golden rule of transfers: don't buy based on World Cup performances and don't buy in January. And it looks like Everton might have to dip in and try and do a bit of business. But, you know, if we can match what we did in the summer, you know, and how well we bought there, and you know, how well we've looks like we've started to spend differently, you know, hopefully that's a very good omen indeed.
Yeah, indeed. But we'll keep an eye on it. And like you say, Pete, don't be buying off the back of the World Cup, that's for sure. That we've seen it done time and again when it goes wrong. But it will impact the January window. But hopefully, and I'm sure we have, Everton will have targets ready and waiting, and hopefully we can get business done fairly early in January for obviously post-World Cup matches when the games will come thick and fast. But our next game, obviously, Saturday night, Goodison Park, 5:30, under the lights. The last game at Goodison Park before the World Cup break, I might add, which is disastrous in itself. This World Cup is interfering heavily with our domestic football. But listen, money talks, doesn't it? But we won't go any further into that. But last time at Goodison Park on Saturday, we're going to discuss that after our final break. Welcome back to the final part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast as we look ahead to the visit of a much improved Leicester City side, it's got to be said, because they started the season absolutely horrendously. Up to a few weeks ago, people were Leicester fans were certainly behind a campaign to get rid of the manager Brendan Rodgers. They actually stopped people requesting birthday messages on the border at the King Power Stadium because they were basically asking for the manager to leave in some way, shape or form. Quite clever, actually. But they've definitely picked up a bit of form, haven't they, Chris? You know, you look at them against Man City this weekend, only lost by 1-0. You've got James Maddison, who's been in good form all season. He's a threat. He's obviously vying for a place in the England World Cup squad. Jamie Vardy, always a threat. You know, you've got Dakar and Iheanacho, who are always dangerous. For me, it was a surprise how Leicester City started the league in a way, but they only brought in one player, didn't they? They lost, obviously, the goalkeeper in Kasper Schmeichel. They brought the sold Fofana to Chelsea, and they brought in Fast, the centre-half, and that was all the deed that they brought in. And so, as much as it was a surprise, because I think they've got real quality at Leicester, I think they're a really, really dangerous side. They've won plaudits over the last few years for the business that they've done. But it was a bit of a shock, wasn't it, to see them where they were, but probably not as much of a surprise now to see them picking up and improving the form.
Yeah, like you, as you say, they always seem to source out really good youngsters, don't they, from the French League or the Belgium League. And they always seem to find these gems. And it's a shock for them, I suppose, for Fofana going. But his safe pass goes in, and he seems to be quite sturdy and solid at the back. So I don't think they've lost too much from Fofana. But then, you know, you look at the midfield, as you say, James Maddison, Tillisman, who's all of a sudden found his scoring boots, hasn't he? And, you know, he scores Wildies. He doesn't score nothing but Wildies when he does score. It was a shock. But then, you know, you always think of Brendan Rodgers, don't you? I think he's like Jose Mourinho. He has a really good, solid 18 months, doesn't he? And then after that, things seem to change. And does he fall out of the squad, or is there something there? It was like that beginning of the season. They weren't up to form. They did look like they were disinterested in sort of playing, really. They haven't had major injuries. I know Vardy's been out in and out, hasn't he? Maffitt Madison's had a couple, but nothing major. And, you know, they've managed to keep the core squad together. So, yeah, it was a shock because they have got a solid team. Daka, I like Daka. I think Daka is a really good player. I thought he was fantastic before they signed him. He was one of the players I wanted Everton to go for, you know, back then. But they've got a really good team. And I think now you look at them against Man City, and City always seem to have this problem with Leicester. It's like their bogey team, don't they? And they do struggle with Leicester now and again. But they put a really good fight up against City. And it gives you thinking coming Saturday. You know what I mean? I think if you probably thought a couple of weeks ago, I'd be probably comfortable beat Leicester. Now I think, you know, we're in for a game on Saturday, and I think they, you know, they'll go push us. But I think Leicester will be okay. I don't think they'll go down this season either. But it'll be an interesting game on Saturday against them.
Well, I think before they won the game against Leeds, 2-0, which was the 20th of October. I think before that particular point, you look at the results: drew a home to Crystal Palace 0-0, got beat away at Bournemouth 2-1. They beat Forest 4-0, but then they got battered by Spurs 6-2, battered by Brighton 5-2, beaten at home by Man United, beaten by Chelsea, beaten at home by Southampton, beaten away at Arsenal. And I think they threw away a lead, didn't they, against Brentford in the first game of the season. They were 2-0 up, and they got pegged back to 2-2. So I think, before that, with against Leeds, like you say, you'd be really in the Everton camp thinking, they come to Goodison Park after how we performed against Crystal Palace. I fancy us. But they've definitely turned the corner. And, you know, they picked up the win against Wolves, as much as Wolves are struggling. To go anywhere and win a game by 4-0 is impressive. But I think they have 5 shots on goal and scored 4, which added to a poor goalkeeping performance. So they were just very, very accurate shots. You know, they've beaten Leeds. And they're unforced and they put in a decent performance against a high flying Man City side as well. So Pete, it's certainly going to be a game that's going to test Everton. You know, we've notoriously, we haven't really, I never liked Leicester when they come to Goodison Park. I never have done. The certain sides have never really enjoyed coming to Goodison. Jamie Vardy, as I say, is always a threat. Tielemans, which Chris alluded to, he's a very good player. And it's one of those games where, for me, Everton, we haven't got to win the game, but I think we've got to certainly get something from the game and look to take the game to Leicester a little bit and not sit too far back. So, you know, we need to try and replicate that Palace performance, don't we?
Definitely. I think it's going to be a test of our mentality because there's a lot at stake here. If you look at the table, what's strange about Leicester, they've won the same amount of games as we. Mm. Problem is that no one's lost more games than them.
Yeah.
But if they beat us, they go level.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, depending on how many goals we win by, they go above us if they win. So it shows you how tight the table is and how, I mean, the bottom half of the table with us sitting 12th where we are at this moment in time, 3 points behind Leicester, who are 18th. You know, it's very, very tight, Pete, isn't it?
Definitely. Well, exactly that. You'd think they'd be coming to our place thinking, one, we can win this, and two, if we do, we're going to leap halfway up the table. Mm. So, look, I'm not saying play for a draw. I think you always play to win, especially at home, and we've got enough to beat them. But it's the kind of game where we could lose it ourselves. We could make it hard for ourselves if we don't approach it in the right way, which is we've got to get on the front foot quickly. We've got to be aggressive. You know, we've got to use the crowd. I think we can't allow ourselves, if we do go a goal down, or, you know, if Leicester are just sitting behind the ball and we're struggling to get forward or put things together, we can't get frustrated. We can't throw the game away ourselves, because I'm not saying it's ours to lose, but I think we can make it more difficult for Leicester because they're really struggling to keep clean sheets. You know, they've lost Schmeichel, obviously. I don't know about you, Mike. I know you're a goalkeeper. I don't think much of their keeper at all. I've seen quite a few of their games this season, and I just think he's really, really poor. I don't think he's Premier League level at all, Danny Ward. And I think we can really get at them. You'd think tailor-made for Calvert-Lewin.
Well, I think you're right. And I was very, very surprised in regards to Danny Ward that he didn't look to replace Kasper Schmeichel. Now, I know they said they got financial issues and they couldn't do a great deal, hence why they sold for Fofana for so much money and they had to let him go. But I was very surprised when you lose, you know, a player like Kasper Schmeichel, who's been a mainstay, who's been a fantastic player for them. You know, for me, as he got older, he got better. You know, he was very much like his dad in terms of how he looked when he saved his shot and, you know, his style and things like that. And I'm so surprised that he's gone. Has he gone across to Nice, hasn't he, in France? And he's getting ripped apart, apparently, in terms of the home fans are not impressed with him whatsoever, thinking he's unprofessional and what have you. And it baffles me because I think he's a very good goalkeeper. But when you don't replace somebody at a particular level, it will always come back to bite you in the backside. But I think Danny Ward's probably felt that pressure a little bit, you know, coming in, you know, from the cold almost to becoming the number one goalkeeper at Leicester after you're replacing somebody who was held in such high esteem as Kasper Schmeichel. So I think maybe a little bit of stage fright with him, but he certainly didn't start the season well at all. He looked absolutely horrendous. And some of the decisions he was making were just comical at times. And, you know, I think he's probably settled a little bit now, to be honest. I think he's now probably become a bit more accustomed to being their number one goalkeeper. But listen, we've got to test them. We've got to test them. One thing that we don't do, Everton, is take many shots from distance. Getting around 18, 20 yards, get a shot off, you know, put them under pressure. They brought Sanchez come back in from the cold as well. I think that was his first start yesterday for a long, long time against Manchester City. You know, Fass, who they brought in, apparently has started the season well. He's a good centre half, but they seem to have these three centre halves. So there's no reason why we can't obviously put Dom Sensel and our two wide players getting behind the wing backs. I mean, I think James Justin and Timothy Castagne were the two who played against Man City. So they sort of play like a 3-4-3, but you know, Justin and Castagne are the ones who are going to look to push on. So the gaps are there. I mean, Tarkowski numerous times yesterday tried that diagonal to Demarai Gray to drop it in. It worked a couple of times. We've seen it in previous games. If fullbacks want to push on, that's great for Everton, because that's when you can use Anthony Gordon and Demarai Gray to good effect. So we've got to be aware of that and where the spaces are, but also be mindful that, you know, Jamie Vardy is a pain. Harvey Barnes, I think, is a quality player for them. James Maddison started the season very well. So you've got to be aware of those kind of players. But midfield, you've got to win it. Tielemans, Dewsbury Hall for them, both quality players. The three lads in the middle have got to win that midfield battle. It's vital that we do. But I think it'd be a really entertaining game. I've got to be honest, I don't think either side will look to take a step back. I don't think Leicester will be coming to play for a draw. I think they'll be looking to try and, you know, they probably built a bit of confidence in recent weeks, and they're thinking, well, before this World Cup break, we've got to look to get ourselves out of the bottom three. Because in terms of building confidence and from a mentality perspective, if you're in the bottom three and we break for the World Cup, that sits on your mind for 6 weeks. If you can pull out of that, even by a point or two, that's big psychologically. So I think that'll be on Leicester's mind as well. But I'm looking forward to the game. I think it'll be a really decent game of football, I've got to be honest. But as I say, last time at Goodison Park before we shut things down for the World Cup. Are you confident, Chris? Do you think we can go win that game?
I might add that Danny Ward, a national treasure here in Wales, may I add.
Is he going to World Cup, Chris?
I imagine so. Who else? You know, Wales really haven't got much to take with them, have they? You know,
what I mean, I think Big Never get a game of Danny Ward, to be honest.
Just for sidesteps here, before we go to the result, what we think is going to be the score, the Neville documentary, the BBC, you're going to be putting out, looks so far from what the trailer does, looks quite good.
So yeah, anyone who's not seen the montage and the trailer for that about Big Neville looks really impressive. Obviously, we know so much about him, we've read so much, we've seen so much. But is it BBC Wales it's going to be out on, Chris?
Yeah, I believe so. They haven't given a date yet, though. I've just seen it sort of be thrown around on their social media, so I haven't really seen a date for it yet. But something to look forward to if you're a Wales fan or an Evertonian, or just in general want to watch someone who's one of the best, you know, goalkeepers ever.
As long as you can stomach Ian Rush making an appearance, because why we the family need to get a cop out on there is beyond me. I know he's Welsh and all that, but come on.
Is he Welsh? Doesn't sound Welsh to me.
Well, the records show that he is in terms of his goals scored, but he makes an appearance. But you know, are you confident, Chris? Do you think that, you know, let's test your cult and your national hero, Danny Ward, whenever we can?
I think we can. I think we're a different opposition, aren't we? When we're under the lights of Goodison, and as you said, it's the last game before the World Cup. And I think we're all going to be wanting to, you know, to get 3 points. You know, I mean, if we can finish the game and play like we did against Palace, or even better, I think we're obviously going to have to work a lot harder against Leicester than we did against Palace. But if we can, you know, grind result there and finish, you know, the semi break on a high with 3 points, and we're looking up, not looking down. I think that's great. That's positive going forward then for our next game. I think is it Boxing Day when we return, or was it the week before?
Yeah, so next game of Goodison is Boxing Day. So obviously we've got a couple of trips to the south coast against Bournemouth, haven't we? Before the season closes. But yeah, so last game Goodison until Boxing Day.
I'm positive. I mean, Leicester, as you say, it's they are on a bit of a high. They've obviously found their form. All three of us have said, they've got, you know, excellent players. But, you know, coming to Goodison is totally different now. It's not like it was last season where players were panicking or scared to make a pass per se. You know, I mean, we're solid now, and I think that, you know, I mean, they're going to feel the pinch as well, because they're having to look up. I mean, they obviously they want to catch up with everyone else and try and get 3 points before the World Cup starts and what have you. But we're a different team now, and I think, I think we'll be more confident in getting something out of this. And I'd be a bit more. I think I'd be disappointed if we didn't get 3 points personally.
Pete, do you agree with Chris? You're going for a home win.
I am. I'm going to give you a very detailed prediction. So we're going to win 2-1. We're going to go 2-0 up in the first half through Calvert-Lewin and a James Tarkowski header. And then it's going to be a nervy second half. We'll let Leicester get one back and we'll see it out for 3 points.
One of these days, Pete, your predictions will be absolutely spot on. To the letter. Goal scorers, type of goal, the works. I think it'd be a little bit more comfortable, I've got to be honest. I think I can see Everton 3-1. And it'll surprise people because we're not massive goal scorers. But I just think after what I saw against Crystal Palace, the fact obviously we are at home, the fact it's under the lights, so we've got this bit of mystique about it, hasn't it, Goodison Park? When the floodlights are on, it's dark, it's, you know, winter's setting in. It brings out the best in Everton. And I think the atmosphere will be spot on because obviously it's last time we'll be there for quite a number of weeks. So I think Everton 3-1, I really do. I think I can see Conor Coady breaking his Goodison Park duck officially, although he scored in the Merseyside derby and it shouldn't really be ruled out. But I think Conor Coady will be on the score sheet, so don't be surprised. And Alex Iwobi will be on there as well. But hopefully it's a good effort win and a good performance and it keeps things ticking over. And before we go into that final league game of the first almost half of the Premier League season. But that's us for this week. Chris, appreciate you coming on at late notice today.
That's fine.
Taking some time out on a Sunday evening to speak to me and Pete.
Much appreciate. Enjoy coming on and speaking about the Blues. You mean it was up for that, and I'm watching terrible horror films with my kids, so got me a break away from it. So,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. That gives you a break from the kids. Always good. Always important.
Yeah.
Well, that is us for this week. So we'll be back after Leicester. So we'll be back next day. Next Sunday to look back on that last home game at Goodison Park for quite a while and look ahead to the double travel week to the South Coast. And if you are going down there, I'd probably get a hotel for a few days, to be honest, instead of travelling about 8 hours back. I'd be staying down there myself, but we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.